The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Tower 2 has had a major explosion and what appears to be a complete collapse surrounding the entire area.
Marine 6, 10-4, we were notified, Jake.
Today our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature. And we responded with the best of America.
Four commercial airplanes in the United States, two United Airlines, two American Airlines, have crashed. We know two of them went into, this is one of the planes, American Airlines 77, Dulles to Los Angeles. That plane, that second plane, believed to have crashed into the Pentagon. First American Airlines flight believed to have crashed into one of the World Trade Center towers. United Airlines flight 93, leaving Newark on the way to San Francisco, believed to have crashed in Pennsylvania near Pittsburgh, and finally another United Airlines flight believed to have crashed into the World Trade Center.
Even almost 11 years after the events of September the 11th, still seared in our minds, we struggle with the questions of why. How do we understand? How do we relate? And most importantly, from a Christian perspective, how do we respond? Our conversation tonight with best-selling author, he is Dr. Michael Youssef, host of Leading the Way, the broadcast weekday afternoons at 3:30 p.m. right here on KFAX. Get back to more of your calls for Dr. Youssef. We're going to talk next to Martin. Martin, come on in with your comment or question for Dr. Michael Youssef.
My question is God going to deal with the United States for not helping Israel?
God is going to deal with the United States. Well, let's talk a bit about that relationship. You know, one of the things, Dr. Youssef, that often we've heard cited is the sense that because the United States has been so friendly toward Israel that this has put a target on us, I think we've seen a little bit of an easing of the nature or depth of that relationship under the current administration. But what of this issue of America's relationship with Israel and the whole Islamic question?
You know, when you think about it, Israel is a tiny little country which is a true democracy in the truest sense of the word. For example, we had an Israeli consul general here in Atlanta a few years ago who happened to be a Druze, not Jewish. Now, that you would never find that in the Arab world. In the Arab world, the idea of democracy is one man, one vote, one time, until they take over power. But so we got the tiny little democracy in a sea of, used to be dictatorships, now a sea of Islamic, ideological Islamic militants. And if Israel goes, it's like they often used to refer to Israel as the little Satan, but America is the big Satan. At least that's what Khomeini used to say in Iran. So really, Israel is not even the question. That's just an excuse. To be sure, in their mindset, in their mentality, is that since their world is divided into two divisions, you got the House of Islam and the House of War, that's everybody in Islam and everybody out of Islam, and therefore members of the House of War, Jewish people, have come and occupied the land that belongs to the House of Islam. So consequently, they're not going to rest until they try to destroy Israel. Now, we're not the only country standing with Israel, although we're the only one who are vocally standing with Israel, but other European countries are supporting Israel. The whole, really, the world, except the Muslim world, acknowledge Israel's right to exist. And Egypt and Jordan, at least to a certain degree, used to be Turkey, they all had diplomatic relations with Israel. So it's not that simple that it's because of Israel we are suffering.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Martin. We're going to move on next to Gary in Santa Rosa. Gary, you've been very patient. Come on in with your comment or question for Dr. Michael Youssef.
Yes, thank you very much. Dr. Youssef, I really appreciate the education that you're providing on this particular topic, because I know myself, I don't know a whole lot about what the Muslims believe and why they act the way they act, and this really has shed a lot of light on it. I really appreciate it. Do you, I guess my question would be, do you have a feeling as to how this current administration, how they feel about Muslims and the impact that they have on this administration?
Well, before Mr. Obama was elected, Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, spilled the beans in a conference in Paris, and he said that if Obama gets elected, Israel will be finished, and it's now going to the Arabs. And then they came back, of course, and they denied it. Oh no, that's not the case. And but you know, it's so clear to any person, you have to be blind not to see it, that Israel is totally being, and the way they treated the Prime Minister of Israel and got him in the back side of the White House, and then they get they give the Muslim Arab leaders the red carpet treatment, and there's obvious a bias in the current administration. I mean, that just, and I was in Israel twice last year, and they basically very afraid that America may not be standing by them anymore, and so that is a fact. By the way, Craig, if I can tell Gary and all your listeners, there is, if they're interested in I'm writing a great deal about the political side of things, not as a ministry, but a separate entity. It's called MichaelYoussef.com. It's that very simple, MichaelYoussef.com. And I've written extensively about the political issues. This is a company that is not a ministry, and therefore I had the freedom to write about it without being associated as the head of Leading the Way or the church. And I've written about the whole issues of the Middle East, Islam, politics, the Arab Spring. As a matter of fact, I was, the day the rise of the revolution in Egypt, I was sitting on the CNN desk here in Atlanta on worldwide television, CNN, telling them, don't believe your reporters on the ground. As soon as the Mubarak goes, the Islamists are going to take over. And I have been waiting for them to invite me back so I can say, I told you so.
That hasn't happened so far. Probably no
surprise. It has not happened so far, and I doubt where it's going to happen. But if you, any of the listeners want to check some of the writings on all of these issues, I mean, I have written many, many, many times, and of course my blog is picked up by townhall.com and One News Now, but a whole bunch of other networks. But MichaelYoussef.com, I have a weekly report. There's one on right now on the whole concept of jihad.
Appreciate that. Dr. Youssef, could you stay with us for a couple of more minutes?
Sure.
Okay, great. We're going to take a brief time out. I want to get you a quick update on traffic, see if we can squeeze another call in, and then we're going to have Dr. Youssef answer specifically this question about the so-called Arab Spring turning into what some have considered to be the Islamic winter, particularly in light of what's been going on in his own home nation of Egypt. A quick time out. Back with more and some closing thoughts from Dr. Youssef.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
The world is divided into two sides. The side of faith and the side of infidelity.
Welcome back to the conversation. There was a quote from Osama bin Laden, taken a number of years ago, articulating what perhaps is at the core a very true statement, that the world is divided. It is essentially two worldviews. We're talking about that topic tonight. Dr. Michael Youssef, host of Leading the Way. Of course, this broadcast is heard weekday afternoons at 3:30 p.m. right here on KFAX. Lee in Palo Alto, come on in with your comment or question for Dr. Youssef.
Hi, I just wanted to thank you so much for putting together the prayer chain. I joined your email, and it was just so comforting to know that there was a prayer that everybody was on the same page and saying the same thing, and it was just comforting. So I wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you, Lee. And we're about to launch another one, and next week we're calling for 100,000 people who are going to pray daily for America between now and election day. So thank you for that. Now you're going to hear from me soon.
Well, that's great. Sign me up, and I'll mention it to my Bible study tomorrow night.
Amen.
All right, Lee. God bless you. Thanks so much for your call here tonight. Dr. Yosef, as we've seen kind of the domino effect taking place in the Middle East over the last many months, Tunisia, Libya, your own home nation of Egypt, this sense that I think particularly from a Western viewpoint, and we see the calls for freedom and the fall of tyranny and these dictatorships and so forth. I think a lot of us in the West assume that it naturally meant it was somewhat kind of similar to the American Revolution, rather 1776, that it was a fight for democracy. And yet we've seen, particularly in Egypt, with what's happened to the Coptic Christians and the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood there, that sadly just the opposite is happening.
Exactly. And what's going on in Syria today, and people think, well, this is a freedom-loving people fighting a dictator. No, they're going to be a bunch of dictators for fighting another dictator. The one is Shia sect, the other one is Sunni. And there's a Muslim Brotherhood who are fighting in Syria, not an Al-Qaeda. They're not freedom-loving. So it is really, the sad part for me is to see countries where I used to tell people when they traveled with me, places like Egypt, I say, you're safer to walk in the middle of the night in the streets of Cairo than you are in any American city. I can't say that anymore, because since the so-called Arab Spring, the place has become dangerous. Churches are being burned, people are being killed in the street, and the Muslims are now trying to write a new constitution where it's going to be worse than Saudi Arabia. We're going to chop the hands of people and the legs and all that stuff. And it's really, really sad what is happening to that part of the world today. And we need to realize, and let that be a warning to us, is that that could come here. That introduction of the Sharia courts is basically the camel's nose under the tent.
And we've seen that there had been a move toward more and more states wanting to pass laws that would forbid judges from utilizing so-called Sharia law in the application of American jurisprudence. But now we're seeing even that is kind of beginning to sort of wane. It seems as if the further we get away from 9/11, the dimmer our memory grows. And it's interesting because as much as we pride ourselves on our intellectual enlightenment in the West, there seems to be almost a sense of spiritual ignorance on this topic that's astounding.
Exactly. And England is a very good example of that. They thought, well, if they allow two or three Sharia courts, you know, for the Muslims who really want to be treated by their laws, which is terrifying to women, by the way, because they would go to a Sharia court and the man has beaten his wife, and the Sharia judge says, hey, go back and beat her some more, because that's what you commanded to do. And those two, three courts, now there are 88 of them. Mm. And they are growing like Topsy throughout the British Isles. And as I said, it's only you get the camel's nose under the tent, and it's Katie by the door.
A final question for you, Dr. Yosef. You've been so gracious to stay with us a little longer here tonight. On the grander topic here, as we talk about what's going on throughout the globe and the responsibility of the church, and I don't want to get distracted with too much focus on eschatology, but where do you see all of this headed, number one, particularly as we've seen the so-called Arab Spring turning into this Islamic winter in countries like Egypt?
Yeah.
And then secondarily, what do you believe is the responsibility of every Christian in terms of how do we respond to all of this?
I think any Christian who claims to really know the Lord Jesus Christ and being born again and is not involved in some way in evangelism, in global evangelism, is really sinning against the Lord. And I'll talk about global evangelism. It could be across the street or across the world. It's sinning against the commission of the Lord. He is the one who commanded us to go to Ta'ethna. That's every nation, every ethnic group. And especially these days, if we're living in the last days or not, I've been doing a series on 2 Thessalonians. And Paul talks about end of history when he said you basically see that the Holy Spirit begin to withdraw, that restraining force of the Holy Spirit. Not the Holy Spirit himself will disappear, but as his hand, the power and influence been taken out of the world, the spirit of lawlessness, and we see that spirit of lawlessness is happening all over us, all over the world, and it's all around us. And then the man of lawlessness will rise, And whether we are around the corner from that or not, I'm not one of those people who set dates, but I'm certainly saying that we're living at a certain time in history where it is incumbent upon every Christian to get serious about their Christian faith and stop sitting in the seats of salvation on that blessed assurance and going to church and then living for self for the rest of the week. I think those days are over for believers. Now, we want to challenge the Christians to realize their God-given call and responsibility to be actively involved in reaching out in one way or another. Now, some people can go, some people can give, some people can pray, but every church and every believer should be involved.
And, you know, to kind of put a bow on this, the only hope for the world is the gospel of Jesus Christ, and it's incumbent upon us to share that message. We are called to love our neighbors as ourselves and to go into all the world and preach the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's not a mandate that rests only on the shoulders of Dr. Youssef, but in fact a mandate that rests on the shoulders of all of us.
Craig, thank you so much for having me.
Take care now. Dr. Michael Youssef, Blindsided, The Radical Islamic Conquest. Details, too, there on the ministry of Leading the Way. I want to get more information specifically about his background, both a senior pastor of the Church of the Apostles in Atlanta and his involvement with the Leading the Way broadcast. Information on the web at leadingtheway.org.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Linda Goldfarb joins me, as she has done before. Linda is a leading contributor to the series we talked about, the new book, Leading Ladies, Discover Your God-Grown Strategy for Success, recently published by Bold Vision Books. And Linda joins us to kind of pick up on where we left off last time. And hey, Linda, great to have you back with us.
Hey, Craig, how are you? It's always good to be here.
Now, I got to tell you, some folks know that I do co-hosting of a financial advice and retirement planning program. And on the show, we often talk about different personality types, largely in the arena of money. They break down into two, savers and spenders. And the argument typically goes, you know, when you get two savers together, boy, that's a great thing. That means you're going to have a lot of money in the bank. You'll probably not enjoy much of life because you're afraid to spend. When you get a pair of spenders together, oh boy, look out. That means you have no money in the bank whatsoever. And then, of course, the third category, the mixture of a saver and a spender, which often means an awful lot of conflict going on within the family. And largely, this comes down to the differing ways in which we approach money. A lot of it comes from our family of origin and our education and our relationship with money. And so, at the end of the day, understanding money personality types, critically important. But then, too, the broader sense, and you talk a lot about this, the notion of these personality assessments giving us a better understanding, particularly when it comes to not only marriage relationships, but even parenting, to understand that, you know, one kid behaves so differently than the other doesn't mean that he or she is necessarily bad or didn't pay any attention. It just might mean that they fit into an entirely different personality category. Tell us more about that.
That's a great question, and you are absolutely right. There's not one better than the other. As a matter of fact, Craig, the study that I have done, or the background work that I've done on brain science and how the different personalities are showing up, as far as, man, this one personality really does connect with this other one easily, this one connects with this one easily, nowhere in the mix does it differentiate between intellect. So intellect doesn't come into a factor here. There's not one personality that's smarter than the other. And I think that that's very, you know, that's very important for us to bring to the forefront as we discuss the differing between the children that we have in the family. One is not bad and the other good. They're just different. I had a family of five that walked through one of my parenting and personality courses, and this was over an 8-week period, Craig, and it was an odd pairing, but it really did bring out the impact of not truly understanding personalities and how important it is for the parents The parents had very similar personalities. Maybe one was stronger in mobilizer and the other stronger in organizer. And then two of their children had the same personalities. But the third one didn't. And when they came into the class, into the course, it was, we need to fix this one because she's broken. And I'm looking at them going, well, tell me why you believe she's broken. She's not like us. She does everything entirely different. This is how we function as a family. This is what we do. This is how we think. And she comes up against everything. And about 3 weeks into the course, they came up and said, oh my goodness, what in the world have we done? We have put her in a box where we were not allowing God's design to come through that child. We were deciding that she needed to be more like us, and that being more like us was the right road. And that's what we come up against, Craig, so often with our children. If our children have different personalities, the easygoing one, which would be like the peacemaker, I call them the stabilizers. You know, they're easygoing. They don't make a lot of fuss. Oh, people sometimes don't even recognize that they're around because they're just, you know, they're there. They're compliant and easy to have things done. So, or easy to get things done. And then you have the leader personality, which is a little bit more outgoing. This is an extrovert. And the leader, who is my mobilizer, they want to get things done. They want to move a lot faster. They want the peacemaker, who moves slower, to hurry up and speed up. A parent who is a leader mobilizer personality, and they have a child who is a peacemaker stabilizer personality, their tendency is to see that child as being lazy. And if they proceed that way without truly recognizing, no, by God's design, this child processes slower. Give them a little bit more time. They're not lazy. They want to do what everyone else does. They like being around people as well, but they need their downtime. And they need a little bit more time or front time to know that changes are coming. So that's just one dynamic that needs to have enlightenment, for a better word, in the families. And when we truly get that our children aren't out to get us, that they're just designed as, you know, as we hear, raise up a child and how they should go and they will never depart from it. I look at that as raise up a child in their design. And then they're going to be exactly who God wants them to be.
You know, it's interesting you bring this up because I think, for example, the way we approach things in the business world, we know that there is the profile of the individual, for example, that may not always be the best talker. They're kind of a loner. They eat by themselves at lunch. They don't really hang too much with the other employees. But boy, get them in the office and get them behind the computer working on an Excel spreadsheet or dealing with numbers. And they're phenomenal. I mean, they're just, their attention to detail is over the top fantastic. So from a managerial standpoint, we would say, you know, that kind of personality profile, who is good with the real minutiae, the details, the numbers, that's the person you're going to assign to an important accounting and bookkeeping or auditing job. That's probably not the person you're going to say, well, we're going to send so-and-so out, we're going to put them in charge of the sales department. They're shy, they're bashful, they're awkward, they just, you know, they're not good around people that they don't know. It's not a flaw, it's just that they are wired a little bit differently. They've got a different kind of personality. So it sounds like really what you're suggesting here, Linda, is that the earlier on parents study this and begin to get an understanding of, particularly when there's multiple kids in the family, who kind of fits into what category, is going to make life a lot easier, because then that means your instructive style, your teaching style, your motivation style, the kind of tasks that you give them are probably all going to be very different.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're not going to push their head down, Craig. I think we very quickly, we do that in a family dynamic because parents want their children to be successful. They want their children to be liked. Now, that would be more if you have a socializer mom or a socializer dad. They like to be liked, and they want their children liked. And so if they have Johnny, who sits off to the side when everyone else is actively involved in conversation, they're going to say, oh no, poor Johnny is not going to be liked, so I need to make life fun for him. And Johnny is looking at parent A coming over and saying, oh no, mom's going to make me go and play with these kids. I really don't want to do that. I'm fine right where I am. And then you have, it could be Bobby. And Bobby is the analytical. Bobby is the one that studies everything. Bobby's the one, as you were saying, they step back, they're looking. It's not that they don't like people or being in with people. They are very much the researchers. They are the ones that are going to be observant. They're looking for opportunity. They're watching. They're very intellectual. My husband is this personality. And when I would say to him, the first time that I said to him, Craig, personality is like 99.9% correct all the time. And he said, you're right. And so for me, I was like, okay, well, he's not being arrogant. But you know, in the workplace, Craig, it can come across as that. Because this person who has done the research is, they're waiting for someone to ask them, what did you discover? And they want to share it with them. And here's what can happen in the work dynamic as well. When you mentioned, well, you're probably not going to put this personality where they're, you know, in charge of the sales staff. It would depend. It would depend on what you wanted to see from the sales staff, because this person would absolutely make sure that they turned in the sheets that needed to be in, that they did it in a timely fashion. And this person can be sensitive to the life happenings of the other members of the organization. Now, if it was a mobilizer, get it done personality, this one is the driver. This one is the one who's going to look at the sales staff and say, just get it done. I don't care what you're doing. That's not my problem. That's on you. I need it done. I need it done by this time. And so the sensitivity factor might be a little less there. And then if you have the stabilizer, who is the more laid back, the easygoing, I'm not going to cause or ruffle any feathers. What we have found with this personality, Craig, is that when they are put into a workplace, and in that workplace, their job description says, this is what you have to do. This is why you have to do it. They will rise to that position, and they will be exhausted when they get home. Mm. And then you have the socializer who is great as being the head or the front person of an organization. This is the face. This is the voice. This is the one everyone goes, oh, this is a great social person. They are great at events. They want to meet everybody. They do not get tired meeting everybody. And yet they may need to have a keeper that will make sure they stay on the timeline, make sure that they don't over-obligate. Because they'll be the one that'll say, oh, that's a great idea. We can do that. And then they'll have one of their workmates over to the side shaking their head going, we can't do that. Yeah. We've got to discuss it first. Don't commit. So all four, and they're blends. We have blends. But when we look at the four dominant personalities, and the mobilizer who gets it done, the socializer who's the life of the party, stabilizer who's a peacekeeper, organizer who loves order, when they are all matched as part of a team, it is one of the most dynamic, forward-moving organizational positioning that you can do, because not only will things get done, everyone will enjoy what they're doing. Everyone will feel like they're seen, because the one who's in the background, they want to make sure everyone's okay. The one who's outgoing, the social, they want to make sure everyone is having a little bit of fun. Organizer's going to keep them on task, and the mobilizer's going to... when we can have a blend of all of those as leaders, because they can all be leaders, they're just going to have a different style.
I laughed a moment ago because I was conducting some interviews today, and I had a gentleman that was assisting me kind of roll the different folks through into a meeting one after another. And after I'd finished the conversation in the recording, I'd start to talking. Craig, we got another guest, and he did an excellent job keeping me on track, because otherwise, yeah. I'm a talker. I just keep going, and before you know it, the time has run out. In fact, I'm getting a look from my engineer saying, yeah, I understand that, Craig. Boy, do I get that. We're going to pause for a moment. When we come back, I want to spend a couple of minutes, Linda, talking about how parents can go about identifying these differing personality traits early on and then learning how to most ideally harness those traits so that your expectations for each of your kids is all set appropriately. Linda Goldfarb with us today. She is one of the award-winning contributors to the recently released Leading Ladies, Discover Your God-Grown Strategy for Success, published by Bold Vision Books. She is also one of the creators of Linked for Parents, that helps you maximize family connections, gives you a guide to understanding your kids' personalities, and most importantly, how everybody can work together in peace and harmony. That sound like a welcoming idea? We'll get back to more of the conversation right after this.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
I would suspect for many parents that, you know, in the busyness of raising young kids, you may not be closely paying attention to their personality traits. And I think a lot of parents are even more focused on how to mold that personality into what you think it ought to be. And while there's certainly degrees in which we can and should, quite frankly, be training up a child, I think there's also an understanding that, you know, if the kid is an oak tree, you're not going to turn him into a walnut tree as hard as you try. So make sure, though, that oak grows big and tall and strong, likewise the walnut tree. But how do you learn the difference, and how can you ascertain that early on enough so that you can maintain a sense of peace and harmony within the household? Well, to get some insights as to these differing personality traits and how you as a parent can ideally harness them, we're talking with Linda Goldfarb. Linda is an award-winning creator of Linked, the Quick Guide to Personality series, also contributor to the recently released Leading Ladies, Discover Your God-Grown Strategy for Success. In fact, we made a series out of the book here on the talk show. Hope you had a chance to catch that. So let's talk about this, Linda, in terms of learning early on the differing personality traits, and maybe certainly between husband and wife, it might be good to start there so that you understand more about why does your husband act the way he does, or your wife has this weird quirk that really isn't weird, it's just different than you.
Absolutely. And Craig, that is the best place to start. When we parent, the best way for me to parent my child is for me to understand myself, for me to understand how I'm designed, what my tendencies are, both the good and the not so healthy tendencies. And when I can identify myself, then I realize quickly that's why I respond or react to someone. And when we react, that is a knee-jerk, I'm going to do this, and that really does kind of let you know quickly what personality you most likely fall under. When we look at the mobilizer, the leader personality, this is the one who will step out in leadership. This is an independent child. It's an independent parent. This is a parent who likes things done their way. This is a child who will push to have things done their way. They will push and see what boundaries are in the house. And the parent may say, why are you always up against me, your wife? Even as a little one, as a little bitty, these are going to be the ones that are very loud. They're loud. They'll go and they'll sit next to a sibling and they'll start telling the sibling what to do. This is that person who will easily take charge. What they need in the family is they need to know that one of the parents is in charge and that it's not their job. That will actually give them a little bit of peace because they'll know that there is a leader figure in the home. And when a parent is not afraid of this child and gives them roles of leadership in the home, which could be anything depending on their ages, right? It can be, you can decide today if you're going to put your clothes on before or after breakfast. Now, they're going to put their clothes on, their clothes for school. They're going to get dressed, but they get to choose. Do I get dressed before or after breakfast? That gives them a choice, and it helps them feel secure in who they are. This is just a simple thing that a parent can do. If a parent has the talker, like it sounds like you and I have that very similar trait there, Craig, the talker, the life of the party, socializer, what the parent is going to want to do is allow that child time to talk. This child will talk. They'll talk all the time. But when you can designate a time and say, you know what, in the mornings for breakfast, I want you to tell me all that you're excited about school. What are you excited about school today? And that child's going to tell you. And you know, this happened and this and this and this. Your others, like your peacemaker, they're going to sit there and go, you go ahead and keep talking. I don't want to talk. And then the thinker is trying to figure out why the talker is talking so much, but they're not going to say anything. And the leader just wants to get their food eaten and out of there. So, but the parent, if they will allow the natural talker time to talk, they will endear themselves to the child, and the child will think, they see me. Then we go to the stabilizer, the peacemaker. And this is the one, maybe you feel like you want to get them talking. All they want is for you to see them and be with them. They may not want to talk, but they may want to sit near you. They may want you to participate in something that's a little more low key, and maybe just asking them some simple questions like, well, how do you like doing this? Or how did you figure out you could take this apart and put it back together? Tell me a little bit of what's going on. And we don't force them, but we listen. This is the child who is compliant, who will not get upset for not being seen until they've had their limit. And then they can basically implode. And you will say, I never knew there was a problem.
Yeah, and so I think it's important to underscore that, because oftentimes I think parents, because, you know, we tend to not only have a sense of expectations in our own mind, but oftentimes even project that on a child. I mean, just ask any kid whose father always loved baseball but never got an opportunity to play for a team, recognizes his son's got a good, pitching arm, and is now forcing that kid to the point where the kid, kind of liked baseball, and now, thanks to dad, absolutely hates it. But the dad wants to vicariously live out his dreams through the child. And I think it comes down to the notion, as you're suggesting, through all of this necessity, really, to engage in understanding your child's differing personalities, is to understand that just because they don't meet your expectations or do things the way you think they ought to be done doesn't mean that they're defective. It might just mean that they're different.
And they're different. And I would share with my parents all the time. You may look at your child and say, oh, look, he's got your eyes. Oh, he has your nose. Well, here is the truth. They are parents' image. They're made in God's image.
Bingo.
And they're designed by him to be who he needs them to be. And if we can identify that when they're younger, then we bring them up in their strengths, and it's amazing what they can do. I've had several children, exactly as you're saying, where their parent is a fast go-getter, outgoing, and they see success for their child as being the same as them. And when they can release that, when they can sit down, and communication is key here, Craig, when they can sit down and look across at their child and say, if you could do three things this week and it didn't cost us, 10 tons of money, what would you like to do? And just give them time, because two of them, your stabilizer peacemaker and your organizer thinker, they're not going to answer you spontaneously. So you might need to say to them the beginning of the week, I'd like to talk to you on Wednesday or Thursday, and let's see if we can find something that you might like to do in the next two weekends, something that we could maybe do together. So you're giving them time, but then please make sure and come back, because the organizer will be waiting. If you do not come back and do what you said you were going to do, that will upset them. But then midweek, you go in and go, did you get a chance to think about it? And if they say, I'd like to sit and just watch this show with you, don't tell them why that's not a good idea. Just do what they asked you to do. And with the other two personalities that are more outgoing, they're going to want activity of some kind. And not that the stabilizer or organizer won't have activities, but they're not going to be as high energy. And always knowing, if we ask them a question and they give us an answer and they feel that they are safe in answering, not that they have to answer the way the parent wants them to answer, because we can lord things over our kids. We can push in a way that we don't even know we're pushing, and they're going to give the answer that they think you want. So we need to give them freedom. And in that we say, really, whatever it is that you want to do. I know that we like to do certain things, but what would you like to do? And then plan it and do it and watch how your child gravitates to you more.
Yeah, and not only so, because you're now empowering them to engage not only in what they enjoy, but also, dependent upon what that interest or skill set might be, maybe even help to foster their skills and abilities. You know, mom and dad may not be able to even bang out chopsticks on the piano, but if the kid is showing some interest, don't discourage it. You might have yourself a concert pianist at your hands. Linda Goldfarb, we sure appreciate the insights. Information, by the way, on Linda's work. We've been talking about much that she's got in the Linked for Parents personality assessment. Check her out online at Linda Goldfarb, Linda, G-O-L-D-F-A-R-B, lindagoldfarb.com. That's lindagoldfarb.com. Linda, thanks so much for the time. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Lifeline. Thanks so much for being with us. And if there was anything you heard on today's show that you'd like to hear again or share with a friend, grab a copy of the Lifeline podcast. Simply log on to KFAX.com. That's KFAX.com for the Lifeline podcast. Our producer is Wanda Sanchez. I'm Craig Roberts. Till next time round, remember, just don't keep the faith. Get out there and share it and make it a great evening. So long.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of KFAX. Copyright Salem Communications, all rights reserved.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.